Hi, everyone. This is Jorge Amaro with the National LGBTQ Task Force. Thank you for joining us today in this very important call. We're all very happy that you were able to join us. Today, the National LGBTQ Task Force and the True Colors Fund will be announcing a new resource titled At the Intersections. I'll just go over the list of the folk that will be speaking during the presentation today. First, we'll hear from Megan Morey from the National LGBTQ Task Force, then Krista Price at True Colors Fund, Jema Shelton, also with the True Colors Fund, Coco Wheeler at the True Colors Fund, and Sassafras, author and advocate. We'll then next hear from Thomas Wilson, an LGBTQ youth who has experienced homelessness. So now I will go ahead and pass the mic to Megan Morey.
Good morning, everyone. This is Megan Morey from the National LGBTQ Task Force. And I'm going to be super brief. I just kind of wanted to talk about where this report came from. So about a decade ago, we were then called the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, put out a report with the National Alliance to End Homelessness called Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Youth, an Epidemic of Homelessness. And as you can even tell from that title, it had a tone about it that was sort of bring attention to an issue that folks weren't thinking about, but definitely had a different tone than the one that we're taking in this report. In the decade between then and now, our perspectives on how to advocate around homelessness have changed quite a lot. So have our language and what we consider best practices. The report that we put out in 2006 was about 180 pages. It was quite long, super comprehensive, and highlighted a bunch of what were then kind of the forefront of organizations that were working with young folks who were experiencing homelessness. Today, we work with more service organizations across the country than we even knew of then, and have really taken a different perspective about what's important. And I think the core of this report is centering the voices and experiences of the actual young folks who've experienced homelessness and looking at the issue through their eyes. There's also new statistics in this report and new service providers that we're highlighting, and you're going to hear a little bit about that throughout the call. So I just want to say how excited I am about this work. It was super collaborative. We worked with the True Colors Fund, but we also worked with 68 different people from 40 different organizations to put this work together so that we had information from all of the experts and not just a smattering the way that we did a decade ago. So I'm going to turn it over to some of those collaborators now. Jema, do you want to take it away?
Yes, absolutely. My name is Jema Shelton, and I'm the Deputy Executive Director at the True Colors Fund. I'm going to just make three quick points about At the Intersections and what we know about LGBTQ youth homelessness, what we've learned over the past decade that's highlighted in At the Intersections. So one is we know a lot more about LGBTQ young people experiencing homelessness, the service providers who work with them, and we also are working to get even more data. There are projects like Voices of Youth Count led by Chapin Hall at the University of Chicago and Point Source Youth that's working to implement and research specific interventions to help LGBTQ young people exit out of homelessness. We're also no longer focused solely on a crisis response. We're aware now that we need to do a lot more than provide crisis shelter beds for young people if we would like them to succeed and thrive as adults. So for example, the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development launched and has been leading the LGBTQ Youth Homelessness Prevention Initiative in Hamilton County, Ohio, and Harris County, Texas. True Colors Fund has been working as a partner with HUD on this initiative. And you can see a case study from that initiative in At the Intersections. And then finally, we understand now differently than before the multiple intersecting factors that cause LGBTQ young people to experience homelessness. And so that's another thing that you're going to see quite a bit in this collaborative resource. We're talking about young people's involvement in juvenile justice, child welfare systems, young people who have histories of immigration, people who have various gender identity, sexual orientations, and the role of race, racism, and poverty in driving LGBTQ young people into homelessness. So we're really excited about At the Intersections and can't wait for you to check it out. And I'm going to pass it on now to Coco, who's going to talk a little bit more about specific layout of the report. Thanks.
Jana. This is Coco Wheeler for the True Colors Fund. I just wanted to highlight a bit the layout of the report. And there's four sections. I'll just briefly walk you through them. So it starts with common narrative, which is like the opening section. The content is essentially how it sounds. You know, we're looking at experiences that are familiar to LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness. As Jana mentioned, this ranges from, you know, histories of foster care or juvenile justice involvement, experiences of violence or poverty, you know, mental health or other medical diagnoses, you know, experiences of HIV and AIDS. And then the next section, we go into the deeper dive, and this kind of takes the conversation to a deeper level. At the intersection, explores intersectional identities and lived experiences. So we're talking about institutional racism. We're talking about being undocumented and identifying as LGBTQ. And we're also talking about the responsibility of providers. Shifting narrative, you know, we want to move away from stigmatizing or pathologizing language and move forward to a lens of, you know, more resilience, right? The third section is innovative approaches, and here we highlight some providers that are doing really good work to support LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness in, I think, really exciting ways. So, you know, an example would be a community-based housing in Minnesota, or, you know, we highlight a street free skip initiative in Nashville, and another pilot program for housing first models in Massachusetts. And then the last section is solution strategies. And this section really synthesizes all the content that has been presented. And it takes us into a direction of how to create change and where we go from here with the information that we have now. One example of, you know, a chapter that I found really powerful is on public engagement. And this section really focuses on effectively crafting messaging. We want messaging that's authentic and affirming while still being accessible to the general public. So should we use the acronym LGBTQ? Will that ostracize people from our message? You know, how can we effectively use statistics in a way that's not silencing, you know, unique experiences of young people, but also conveys a disproportionate number of youth who are experiencing homelessness that identify as LGBTQ? So, you know, authentic storytelling, creating space, and, you know, ensuring youth experiencing homelessness are given the opportunity to tell their stories, because really they are the experts on their lived experiences. So I would love to pass it over now to Krista to talk about, you know, the actual report itself.
Thank you, Coco. I'm Krista Price, the program officer at the True Colors Fund, and I just want to talk a little bit about how this report is vastly different. So this report is all online, which offers many components that a written report lacks. So not only can you, like, keyword search throughout the entire report, but there are feedback components that allow folks in the community to let us know how we can make this resource even better. Specifically, be easier for us to make additions and updates, as Megan mentioned, as the community and our priorities kind of shift, and they will probably shift. Folks can stay up to date, they can subscribe to updates. So this is definitely like a livable resource and movable and changeable. And we also wanted to keep that collaborative spirit that we started out with and continue that and make sure that the community is actually informing the resource as it moves and changes. I would love to pass it off to Sasrath Lowry, who is one of our awesome contributors, who wrote an excellent section for our report.
My name is Sasrath Lowry. I'm a queer author based in Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in Oregon, and when I was in high school, I ran away from home after physical abuse intensified when I came out. And then a couple of months later, I was kicked out by adult friends whose home I fled to, and they discovered that I was queer, leaving me no choice but to couch surf in my semi-rural community. I survived because I created queer family with other homeless kids whose lives mirrored my own. I built my own family, creating a family that, amongst other things, taught me how to navigate social service systems as an out and proud queer person. The creation and ongoing support of that queer family is what not only helped me to survive, but is what inspired me to dedicate my life to writing and advocacy work on behalf of current and former homeless LGBTQ youth. My literary work has predominantly been framed around centering the importance of queer families that we as LGBTQ people create, and so I was thrilled when I was invited to write the section on redefining families for this powerful new resource. I believe that it is not only important but essential that we approach all areas of work with homeless LGBTQ youth from an intersectional lens. Too often, I've heard people say, LGBTQ youth homelessness doesn't happen in my community, or here's the best practice that should always be employed when working with homeless LGBTQ youth. Both are dangerous and limiting statements. We know that LGBTQ youth homelessness is an epidemic that impacts all communities across our country. As such, if we're going to talk about LGBTQ youth homelessness and the experiences and needs of youth who are currently running away or being thrown out of their homes and communities, we must be committed to naming that this experience happens in every community. But we also cannot assume LGBTQ homeless youth to be a monolithic group of young people, or that solutions to ending the epidemic can take a one-size-fits-all approach. For example, my needs as a white, semi-rural, runaway, genderqueer-identified teen in the early 2000s looked very different than some of my peers who were genderqueer and cisgender youth of color living on the streets in the city where I moved to while couch surfing. And all of our needs and experiences looked different than those of youth today. As we're talking about LGBTQ youth homelessness, we must remain aware of and attentive to the ways in which homelessness intersects with racism, classism, homophobia, transphobia, ableism, and sexism, and the ways that those impact the lives of individual homeless youth. In 2010, I edited the two-time American Library Association honored and Lambda Literary Award finalist Kicked Out anthology. This book brought together current and former homeless LGBTQ youth, ranging in age from youth who were currently street homeless at the time of publication to individuals who had been forced to leave home as teenagers pre-Stonewall, as well as the perspectives of advocates and policy leaders. Kicked Out was the first book of its kind, born directly from my frustration of not being able to find any book that spoke directly and in the words of survivors to the experience of being runaway, throwaway, kicked out queer youth. I was thrilled that the National LGBTQ Task Force agreed to allow me to excerpt a portion of their groundbreaking report, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Youth, An Epidemic of Homelessness, into the anthology. This excerpt provided my readers, which have included countless college students, service providers, and most importantly to me, youth who are experiencing homelessness and looking for connection, a nuanced understanding of the scope and scale of the epidemic of LGBTQ youth homelessness that is needed in order to understand that this is not something that just happens to the occasional youth, but is a crisis impacting our entire community. The report supported us in framing queer youth homelessness as the epidemic that it is. I believe the strength of this new resource guide is the way it provides a focus on the importance of intersectionality while talking about issues facing homeless LGBTQ youth, and more importantly, the way it queers service provision by highlighting and prioritizing the needs of youth voices, framing the epidemic of LGBTQ youth homelessness as a core issue facing the LGBT community as a whole, recognizing that current and formerly homeless LGBTQ youth are our current and future movement leaders, and prioritizing the need to create space for us to be out about our experience of homelessness. In the section I authored on redefining families, I focused on the life-saving role that created families play in the lives of homeless queer youth. An embodiment of LGBTQ youth resilience is creation of our own families. It is essential that service providers respect youth's definitions of family and who they consider family as the same ways they understand the importance of respecting the chosen names and pronouns of any youth. To not respect chosen families is to reenact the same identity rejection many homeless LGBTQ youth have experienced from their biological families. Queer kinship networks and created families in all of their diverse forms are frequently a primary source of support for LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness, and those queer families take many forms. Some, but not all, mirror, quote, traditional family structures using terms like brother, mother, uncle, or daughter, for example. Service providers should talk with youth about what their queer families mean to them. The highlight of writing this section on redefining families was the chance to incorporate a current youth story. Independence, a homeless agender teen in California, shares in their own words what creating queer family has meant to them, and I want to end this morning with their words. Quote, if you haven't tried to pull in a homeless queer youth into your life or community, now is the time. We need everybody to help us get support and to allow us to grow. Pull us in and give us love and support, and we will flourish.
Thank you, Sassafras, for sharing that. Up next, we'll have Thomas share his remarks.
I'm Thomas Wilson from New York City. I'm now 26. I have been, the last 3 years, I've kind of experienced housing instability here in New York City, which kind of, I guess, brought me here into the True Colors Fund. Last year, I was one of the inaugural class of the Truth Fellowship, where I got to do some really great work with LGBT youth that have either experienced homelessness or are experiencing homelessness currently. In my experience, being in New York City, I've been in a lot of, sometimes people call them hotels, like SROs, like single room occupancy situations, where I've experienced a lot of different things from like being thrown amongst people in a lot of different situations, be it like mental health situations, like drug abuse, which kind of haven't always been comfortable for me. So being asked to be here is like an honor, and I really appreciate the True Colors Fund asking me to come, because like I'm not normally asked to be at these situations. I feel like it's a better way for everybody to be able to serve properly, and so everybody can be able to move forward with the movement that we're trying to ending youth homelessness.
This is a very important issue. What kind of a timeline do you have set up here to address some of these issues?
We've sort of like highlighted a bunch of the sort of issues around this on the call today, but we talked less about the solutions that we're sort of proposing through the report. And when you go in to look at the resource, you'll see there's a whole section called Solution Strategies, and it's really just one piece of a much broader conception of what we actually think solutions look like. Because there is no single sort of silver bullet solution. It's about changing the way that we talk about this issue. It's about doing things like providing housing first, providing all of the services and supports that young folks need, including safe and supportive spaces for people to come and be themselves. There are a million little pieces to the solution. And this report tries to get to some of those so that people can be providing services and supports in a way that is more effective and impactful on the folks who are currently experiencing homelessness. We do our best to do homelessness prevention as well by providing services and supports before people are experiencing housing instability with folks we know that are at risk. But no matter what, we know that there are going to continue to be some folks that experience housing instability, and this is one way to provide information to folks to sort of help them provide services and supports in a better way, if that makes sense.
The only thing that I would want to add to that is that are you going to ramp up efforts in the states that have passed these bills against our LGBT community so that this type of legislation that's affecting our LGBTQ youth and putting them in a very, very difficult situation will have some place to be able to contact you or be aware of this as a tool to help them?
The task force also works on repealing laws like HB2. And our folks are on the ground there right now working on that law and working with a lot with faith leaders to sort of make sure that there are supports that aren't just homelessness-related supports, because we don't want that to be the only system of support that exists for young folks. But we engage in the states where the services and supports are most needed, because we know that those are the places where people most need them. But we also know that there are over 200 anti-LGBT bills across the country, so there's almost no community that's not affected. And unfortunately, neither of our organizations have the capacity to be working in each of those 200 places. So this resource is one way that we can still touch those communities, even if we can't be there on the ground.
And at the True Colors Fund, we are focused specifically on the issue of LGBT youth homelessness and do community organizing work in a couple of targeted communities. Again, we're a staff of nine working around the country, but we're focused now in Tennessee, Texas, Ohio, beginning some work in Nevada and Arizona, Grand Rapids, and Miami. So, you know, again, as Megan said, most young people in most communities are impacted by this legislation, and our work is focused at the state and local level right now around coordinating community-wide efforts to prevent and address LGBT youth homelessness. And in terms of your previous question around timeline, one of the things that's so exciting about this moment right now in terms of LGBT youth homelessness is that there is a big federal effort to address youth homelessness. There's a framework that was put forth by the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, a framework to end youth homelessness by the year 2020. So communities around the country are charged with coordinating their efforts, and with support from some of our federal partners, there's an emphasis on LGBT youth in those community-wide efforts, which is really exciting and is something very different than what was happening 10 years ago.
And that was Jema with the True Colors Fund who just spoke. Before Jema, it was Megan Morey at the National LGBTQ Task Force. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and don't forget to visit the full report online at theintersections.org.